This is the appointed hour. It's 9:30 on January the 9th. This is the postponed meeting of the Planning and Development Committee that was to be held Monday, but we had two members out. We still have one member out. Ms. Stokes Marshall is recovering from shoulder surgery, so she won't be with us, but we do have a quorum today. Before we get started, I'd like to acknowledge that today is National Law Enforcement Appreciation Day, and we've got 140 officers here at the town. So if you see one or two or three of them while you're out today, thank them for their service, because they do a heck of a job here in Mount Pleasant and nationally. But today especially is for them here in the town, and we do appreciate what they do. So please do that. And you're supposed to wear blue today. I see a couple blues out there, so that's good.
I have a blue suit on.
There you go. Okay, let's get started. The agenda items, we need, first of all, an approval of the minutes from the December 1st meeting.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. Number two is we're going to review the Planning Commission's decisions. And, Christiane, I'll turn it over to you. Number eight.
Yes, sir. Good morning. The first request we have is a request to rezone from area-wide business to area-wide business 2. This is for a four-acre piece of property that's located at 84 Belport Drive. Statue at the intersection of Bell Point, and the map is on the screen showing the location of Bell Point Drive and Long Point Road. The applicant has expressed an intended use of outdoor storage for boats and campers. If that were to come to be, that would require a special exception by the Board of Zoning Appeals, and would also require a review for the Design Review Board. But I would just like to offer to the committee that obviously what you are reviewing today is the zoning itself, the 82 request, not necessarily an outdoor storage type facility. So and that's not what you would be approving. You'd be approving 82 if that was a consideration of council. This did require a public hearing and was reviewed by the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission recommended denial by a vote of 6-2 for this rezoning request.
Okay.
Move for denial.
You have a second for a move?
A second.
A motion and a second. Discussion. Okay. Anybody on the committee have any statement to make first?
There's water currently there and no sewer currently there. Is that correct?
The sewer is not available. I assume the water is there. The applicant.
Maybe we'll hear for that from the applicants. I'll hold the info for the question. We'll hear from the applicant.
The applicant is here.
Yes, sir.
Please step forward. Name and address, please, and you have 2 minutes.
Need to be up the podium,
yes, please.
My name is David Bunch, the property owner. My brother Dexter Bunch and I own the property that's in question here. I want to start out with asking you a question first, if you would. If everybody paid property taxes or will pay them before the 15th of January, and we just paid property tax on this piece of property, and you paid your property tax, either own a business or your home, and somebody said, look, you've got to pay your property tax, but you cannot occupy your home or you cannot conduct your business because of a technicality, and that's where I am at this point. My brother and I want to sell this piece of property, and over the years, we've had people interested in it. And what we did is we joined the town of Mount Pleasant because the only way to get water and sewer, particularly sewer in this case, is to join the town of Mount Pleasant. So in good faith, during one of the contracts, we had several that have fallen apart, we joined the town of Mount Pleasant, and then during the due diligence and that type of thing, found out that the sewer line that could have supplied us is a pressure line on the other side of Long Point Road, so it makes it, in fact, going very expensive to go that way. Property that bound us, which is the old Nat Smith Concrete, and they own all of this all the way back to our back property line here, cuts us off from the Paul Foster sewer line in the back out here. So I have to go all the way back to Paul Foster to get my sewer. So where what I've done is paint myself into a corner where I can't get water and sewer until the other development around us is complete or at least completely planned. And everybody knows that's been sort of a volatile situation. So what happens is I sit here, and just like I just ask everybody is about paying your property taxes. I did pay my property taxes, but have no way to generate money because I can't put any kind of business there that deals with the public because I don't have restrooms. When I joined the town of Mount Pleasant, I had storage there. We had a construction company, and they stored a few trucks and that kind of thing. It was a very minimal amount of money they were paying, but I was happy because I could pay my taxes. So we have people that want the store and that kind of thing. That would be a very small impact financially on us to do something like that. And even to the point of if you said, look, we don't want anything up here on the corner, just back this way. I think I could generate enough money to make my property tax payment. And that's basically where I was. I was surprised when I was turned down originally because I thought it was such a practical idea, is to try to do something that would end up, you know, maybe the neighbors would be able to use it and that type of thing and give me some relief from my property taxes.
Thank you, Mr. Munch. Thank you very much. Anybody else would like to speak on this?
Mr. Chairman, Christian, can you confirm that it was mentioned about the annexing it to the town? I just want to make sure that I have my facts correct on this. Do I understand correctly that the county recently changed their overlay rights as well? Is it part of that county overlay?
Yes.
Can you review that for me and what that means to specifically this property?
In the past month to 2 months, they finalized a revision to their Mount Pleasant overlay district, and what that revision did was try to make the permitted uses in this area of Long Point Road not consistent with those of the towns. And they had previously allowed some things that would have allowed, that you've seen before on these properties, the shipping containers and so on. And so they ended up, they had actually some meetings with some residents from Del Holt, County Hill, and within that area, and then ultimately ended up making some revisions to the permanent uses in the overlay district so that those types of uses are only allowed on the port side, the South Carolina State Port side of 526 in order to make things a little more consistent with what the town would allow along Long Point Road in this particular area.
Just thank you for that contribution. Just one final question. Could you just highlight the uses that are allowed in AB, the current zoning for that property?
In AB?
Correct. Which is the current zoning?
Yes. AB is basically it's retail, office uses, hotel uses. Most of your commercial uses that you would see out in the town. The difference is with AB2 is that some of the uses that are more intense or considered to be more intense are only allowed in AB2, so things that would be such as car repair, outdoor storage, high impact types of recreation and entertainment uses, those are only allowed in AB2 district. So it's basically your general commercial.
Thank you.
Christiane, can you tell me what the status is of the other properties around this property? I know we have
the application for the announcement for the February Planning Commission.
February
Planning
Commission.
So it hasn't been anywhere with us yet, other than you talking to them.
Right. There was the one that was obviously submitted and withdrawn, but we anticipate a new application.
And they can do that within the time frame that they took it out?
Yes, you granted, U.S. Town Council granted a waiver.
Right.
And this property has been owned by the Bunch family for some time now, I believe. Is that correct? This is not a recent acquisition.
25 to 30 years.
So, gotcha. Thank you. No further questions.
Any other questions? Anybody from the audience wish to speak? Come forward, sir. name and address in 2 minutes.
David Smythe, I live at 5900 Boulevard in the city of Charleston.
What, this is not a long-term asking. As soon as something starts happening around here, you know, the property will probably be sold. So what we're looking for is an interim type of use to generate enough income to at least pay the expenses on the property. When it was in the county, it was in great income. It carried itself, and right now, no water, no sewer, can't use AB with the zoning that's currently on it. There's nothing we can do with it. So we're looking for just an interim type of use, and if it's, you know, I would say that something's going to probably be done within the next couple of years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Mann. Any more questions? Let's call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. No here. The ayes have it 2-1. The request to rezone is denied. Item B.
The next item that we have, this is a request to amend the Dunes Last Plan Development Ordinance. This would be right by rezoning from Dunes West Office Professional and Dunes West Multifamily to entirely Dunes West Multifamily. I'll explain this further in a second. This is a 2-acre tract. It's located kind of in the front of Park West. It is up on the screen right now. This to orient everyone here. This is Park West Boulevard, as you can see. This is a public shopping center, and this property right here has some commercial uses. As you're all familiar with the area, it's a donut store, pizza shop, are all in here. And so the property in question is this one. The applicant would like to rezone the entire property multifamily. Right now, I'll show you a bubble map from 1990 Dunes West in just a second. But right now, the property appears to have both office professional and multifamily uses on it, and so his request is to clear that up, clarify that, and to get, and is requesting multifamily for the entire, on the entire parcel, with the intent of developing, it would be constructed like townhomes, but it would be horizontal property regime. He does not have the ability to create a public street in order to do fee simple subdivision within this development, so instead he's requesting multifamily, which would allow for the horizontal property machine. Kelly, can you go to the Dunes West map? And so this is the 1990 Dunes West map, Dunes West and Park West, and so the area in question is basically right here, and you can see this is, that's a multifamily. That's his office professional, so his property is basically right in here, and so it's not very easy to discern what exactly is multifamily and what exactly is office professional. So the request is, again, to clarify that and to make the entire property multifamily. This was a public hearing that went to the Planning Commission. The Planning Commission did not recommend approval. There was by a vote of 5-2. The majority of the conversation at Planning Commission had to do with access to the property because it is a landlocked, landlocked piece of property. There is an access easement that runs from here into this parking lot. It is the same owner. This owner of this does own this center right here as well. But that was the concern of the Planning Commission, is that the access to the property would have to be through the parking lot to the development, and therefore I think there's the main basis for the recommendation for denial of this request.
The access point out to Park West Boulevard is where? Just one access point?
Well, there's really two. This is where the easement is located, right here. But there is also this coming off of the roundabout in the bank right here. So coming off of the roundabout, there's an access into the property.
So it's two.
Right.
but into the parking lot. Access right now is into the parking lot.
Yes, sir.
On both of them.
Yes, sir.
Chris, and, it is the same property owner for both properties.
It is.
Is the developer here who wish to make a presentation?
Yes.
Come forward, please. Name and address, please, sir.
My name is Jeff Thomas. I live at 606 East Hopcott Drive in Mount Pleasant. I'm the owner, but I'm going to defer to Kevin Steelman, who is with the developer of Land Tech at Park West, and he has a better understanding of this parcel in the context of the Park West development as a whole.
I'm Kevin Steelman. I'm president of Park West Development, Inc. We're at 3301 South Beck Street in Park West. As Christiane mentioned at the Planning Commission meeting, there was some confusion about the access and just how this property and development fit into the surrounding commercial environment. So we put together, I put together a little presentation to walk you through it. Won't spend a lot of time on this, but the property is part of the Dunes West PD. Which provided for a maximum of 8,437 units, 5,281 of which were assigned to the Park West property when the property was acquired in 1996. A couple of excerpts from the PD that I would point you to, just sections 302, 303, 304, all of which speak to the flexibility that was anticipated and contemplated that the developer would have to move uses and densities around within the project. The project of this size, you can never accurately forecast what is going to be done on the entire property. So great effort was made to provide flexibility, and it stressed that the land use plan presented in 1990 was not final, and that the developer would have maximum flexibility to move uses so long as the maximum densities were not exceeded, the 8,437 units. Summary of what was allocated to Park West, 5,281 units, 886 of which were multifamily. To date, of the 886 units, 605 have been allocated, leaving 281 units remaining. You can see the other densities there. So there's no question about sufficient density remaining. Brief history of this particular piece: it was master planned as part of a retail and office section of Park West back in 2002. Went through all sketch planning with the town, and all that was approved. This parcel was originally sold as parcels 3A1A and B, which was 4.11 acres, sold in 2003. A 17,000 square foot retail center was developed on the front half, and then the back has been marketed for sale ever since and has had little to no interest. That's when Jeff reached out to us to see if we could work together to consider an alternate use, and we worked on a plan for multifamily. And we think it would generate 18 or 19 units. On the site. Final plans aren't done yet, but this is the property, and Christiane did point out that access easement is 40 feet, and it doesn't really go through the parking lot. It goes directly to the property. There's no parking on that 40 feet. It's like a road. It's just not dedicated to the town. So it provides direct access to it, and I'll show you how the roads relate here. This was the original master plan that was approved back in 2002 for the area, and you can see all the interconnectivity of all the parking, and you can see the site there in red. And the two buildings on Park West Boulevard are actually built in there today, and so is all the other parking that's there. This is an aerial photograph which shows existing conditions, so you can see the vast majority of the property has been developed pursuant to that master plan. There are a couple remaining parcels that have had very limited interest, primarily due to the fact that they've had a difficult time keeping tenants in the space that's already there, so nobody can bring on new space. There's no financing for it. and there's really not a market for the space.
I'm going to have to ask you to wrap it up, Mr.
Yeah, yes, sir. That's just a brief aerial showing the interconnectivity and where how the proposed development layout. Townhomes would front on the existing parking. We have access in and out from multiple points.
There.
And then also out the salt of that, we would provide for future connectivity to the other side if the town wanted to, or don't have to if they don't, but we can work that out with staff when the time comes. That's a picture of the access road that goes directly to it. That's where it terminates into the property. And that's a picture of the property there on your right.
So, thank you. Any questions of Yona?
So before you guys step away, just a couple things, seeking clarification. Christian, you said according to the 1990 map, this property currently has two zonings. Is that what I understand? We have two zonings on this property.
That's what you can discern from that map. I showed you earlier. Mm-hmm. It's big, it's multi-family and office professional. And you can't tell exactly where.
Right.
That map is
old,
but that's the conclusion.
I guess, Mr. Chairman, that's where I get a little bit of a concern that, you know, we have a property owner with two zonings on the property, and I understand completely the flexibility that was allowed in the master plan. That good for you that happened then, because I don't think that would happen now. I think we would all agree on that in the climate that we're in now. And you're asking to do something that is just seems like we need to give you some clarity as to what your zoning is, if nothing else. And a little bit of concern, denial based on access, that doesn't seem fair, in my opinion. So I'm a little. We need to make some decisions on the zoning for the property, because.
So we haven't reached a point where an impact study would be made on traffic either, right?
Not on this. No,
right.
This would not
qualify for such.
I will, just to that point, our traffic engineer prepared this slide for me that if it were 13,000 square feet of retail, which was originally approved back in 2002 on the master plan, it would generate 576 trips. The 19 multifamily units generate 110 8 a.m. peak trips and 9 p.m. peak trips. So this is a much lighter traffic load than if the property were developed commercially.
Chairman, you have a minute?
Sure.
And this would address, I think, your concern, Mr. Smith, just a bit of history.
Please.
And why we're at this point from a procedural standpoint. In Park West, as the years have gone on, they have had that flexibility and it was dealt with differently. A few months back, there were some matters before the Planning Commission, and staff, with input from staff, Planning Commission decided that the appropriate procedure was that any applications had to come through the process, and that's where we are now. Prior to this, these changes were not coming through the procedural channels. That's just how it was done all those years. And so what we're left with is this 1990 map that is old.
Right.
It's very difficult for us to tell. And I agree with you that it's some clarity that's at stake here. So I just want to give you some background on the procedural requirements. And I will say that, if, you know, at the very least, this is now going through the appropriate process. Mm-hmm. And if you have any questions on that, I'm glad to answer.
Yeah. Dave, before you step away, mm-hmm. and you guys may want to address this as well, but so we have the same property owner. This is not transferred hands. This is the same property owner for these two parcels. Half of it's developed and half of it's not. If this were allowed residential units in the back, wouldn't that qualify for our mixed use concept in terms of residential and commercial? People are walking to residents and to the businesses, and or does this not qualify under that? Not that you're not asking, and not that I'm even interested in giving you any additional units, but I'm just asking from a mixed-use perspective.
Well, it would, perhaps, in concept, but that this is not a mixed-use PD.
Correct.
This is the Dunes West PD, and it doesn't really comply the same as it would if someone were bringing to you a new mixed-use plan development. I know that the commission did talk about that a little bit and the ability to, you know, if there were residential here and the opportunities that there may be for food or the driveway, those kind of uses that are there. I do want to make sure that
they
get confused with mixed-use
community
because
it is different. Right, a whole separate animal.
It's the plan development that they just want.
But to clarify this, Dave, we do have two zonings on it now, and we're asking, they're asking to remove one of the zonings. Is what we're trying to do here, correct?
Right.
It's our choice as to which one we're going to choose to go forward with, this land.
I think so. I mean, ultimately, that's the final question. And, you know, from a legal standpoint, that access that Planning Commission, I don't want to say got hung up on, but that was wrestling with, that's going to be an issue no matter what the zoning is. Okay, that's not going to change.
Right.
And, you know, so that remains, I don't want to say problematic because I'm sure there's a solution out there. But that's right. You know, what is it? And what, I guess what it comes down to, what they're asking is, this is how we want to move forward with it, this is what we're thinking. I think it's your discretion, and then ultimately council's discretion to say, you know, what should we? Understanding the rules in play, and that is the rules in the agreement, which as you mentioned are flexible, probably not what would be today,
right.
But back in 1990 what was negotiated. So. Those are the two factors. What rules do you have to follow and do you have to look at? And then ultimately, you know, in your discretion, what is the best result?
Yeah, but just making sure I answer that completely, which is secondary. We have two separate zonings on this property, and so the floating zoning that happens in the overall development would be behind what's actually current zoned according to that 1990 map for this specific site. Is that? Just make sure I understand. This is not a zoning change. We got to make a decision. Which is it? So something is going to be developed on this piece of property, and it's currently zoned for either or. So what do we want?
Amendment to the PD, and they have requested multifamily. So to respond a little bit further, Mr. Perry, to the point that you just made, the only thing that's been advertised is multifamily. So if for whatever reason that were not approved, and the applicant would need to come back. For if he so chose to make the whole thing office professional instead, or another district that's allowed within the James West plan development, it would require another public hearing. So whatever action you take today, you wouldn't be able to say, okay, well, we just provided all the OP. That, you know, in terms of the actual ordinance.
Mr. Chairman, can we dig a little more in the traffic? I certainly received so it's a public statement, received plenty of communications, emails, and phone calls and conversations. And I would want to reiterate, I'm a North Mount Pleasant resident, so I don't need to read about and hear about it. I live it every day with traffic and concerns, which we all have. And unfortunately, I am a Joey Bag of Donuts kind of guy, so I'm in and out of that development, quite familiar with that property. And I'm a Tidelands customer. I'm familiar with that side access as well. Can we talk about the traffic counts? I think there was a slide earlier. I just would like to dig a little deeper in that just so it would help me make an informed decision in terms of, in my opinion, something, which do you want? And I'm interested in less traffic, not more traffic.
There's your slide.
Yeah, this shows it's a far less intense use from a traffic standpoint. Another thing I think Christiane pointed out was, while we're not looking for any bonus density from the mixed-use element of this, introducing these residential units will have a positive impact on those retail shops across the street because those people will use the sidewalks that are there to walk through it, to walk across Parkland Boulevard, the Publix, and the dining that's there, and all the bike paths that we have throughout Park West. So they will be able to live a unique pedestrian-friendly lifestyle and mixed in this commercial, which I think is a good use of the existing infrastructure.
And you said you would put in the third access on the backside?
Yes, sir.
Go back to that.
We would, that interconnectivity, we would just stuff to the property line and leave it for the next guy to connect to, and then that would ultimately provide direct access back out to Stockdale Street over to Wando without ever getting out on Parkland Boulevard. There would also be the ability to come down to Salt of that on the existing road, but it would just provide multiple ways in and out.
So your third access that I'm talking about is a stub out.
Correct. Currently, you can see from the aerial, there's a gap there between the parking that's been built to here. This site is undeveloped. When they develop, they'll build this parking. So, you know, if we develop first, if Jeff develops first, he would stub out to them, and then they've already stubbed here, and this developer would just have to make the connection, and then it would all be interconnected with, you know, multiple ways of ingress and egress for everybody.
Mr. Chairman. That undeveloped land, Christine, would that be zoned? Does it also have multiple zonings on it, or does it have clarity in one zoning?
I think that falls into an OP. That appears to be clearly office professional. Just glancing at it quickly.
And that's what it's planned for today. There's an orthodontist kid dentist right next door, too. So, I mean, that's the likely use that it will ultimately be developed for anyway.
Again, on the access, I think planning got hung up on this landlocked word. Mm-hmm. And the property is not legally landlocked. This easement is here. We bought this property with the understanding that we could build back here. We weren't going to buy this property, these two pieces, with the understanding that this was just going to sit vacant forever. It was always the intention for that parcel to be developed.
Well, the good news for you, Mr. Thomas, you bought property with two different zones, so you had options.
Any questions for the developer?
I have a question. You know, I think you started off with your early statement saying that there's just not demand for office professional. I don't want to get ahead of myself, but I know that there's a plan coming for Cambridge Square, which is advertised that it's a vision that there'll be this multifamily further down the road, but there'll be ice cream shops and there'll be coffee shops and people will gather there. So not a half a mile from here, the intent is that that's going to work, but then here it doesn't work. I don't think I understand the distinction of why half a mile away it's a grand vision that works with multifamily, and here it doesn't work.
Well, if you looked at I don't have a master plan of all of Park West, but I can answer that question. In Cambridge Square, is at the heart of a project that has 3,000 homeowners, that has 20,000 cars a day riding through the roundabout, and has the opportunity for much more pedestrian access that's convenient. And it's a tenth of a mile from our amenity center, where kids are going to be all summer swimming and playing at the pool, thousands of them. So it just lends itself much more to that kind of a small shop where people can walk to it, where this is not as inviting for the masses on a big scale to have a pedestrian element to it. The other thing about Cambridge Square is it will have 300 residential units directly attached to it that they can all walk to enjoy that lifestyle as well. So it's just from a planning standpoint, the way this was planned originally, it was more of an office, medical, professional kind of a use was planned here, and all the shops were planned for back in Cambridge Square. Although, you know, Joey Bag of Donuts has been successful and been there for a while, but the other stores in there, they struggled to keep them occupied.
My New Year's resolution is not commission.
How many multifamily units are at the apartment complex right on the other side of this? That's
it's not an apartment complex, it's a condominium project. It's 224 units.
Okay.
Can we go back to
the market? There were originally apartments, but they converted in 2005 before the market came.
Can I go back to the parking slide just for a quick second? Just want to have those numbers in my head. So
the average daily trips there.
Yeah, any other questions?
I have no further questions.
Any that, Chris? Mark, anything?
Yeah, I move for approval of the project based on that slide right there alone and the fact that this is not a rezoning, it's a clarity, so I move for approval of this project.
Of which zoning?
In the 18 units, as I understand, maximum, for the multifamily.
DWMF. Thank you all.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody in the audience wish to speak to this matter? Hearing none, I have a motion. Do I have a second? I'll second the motion. Any more discussion? All in favor say aye.
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 No.
Approved 2-1. Item C. Christiane?
So this next request is also involves an annexation, which the annexation committee saw earlier this week, only in the capacity that the deferral was requested, and the annexation committee did grant the deferral. This is the zoning aspect, and this is for a workforce housing plan development. The developer has requested a deferral on the zoning request of this as well, and from the February meeting. I'll be glad to review it if you would like.
Move for deferral.
Second.
We have a motion and a second for deferral. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Item D.
All right, this is also a request in Park West. It's a rezoning request. This particular request is to rezone what is currently shown on the map that we showed earlier, of properties that are shown as office professional, R3, and multi-family. To townhomes, the request is for townhome zoning on this particular property, the four properties that you see up on the screen. It's about 9 acres total. This went through the Planning Commission and required a public hearing as well, as was, I think, explained by Mr. Pagarini with the last item very well. The proposal here, or the intent, would be for townhomes, 49 townhomes. This particular development did go to the Planning Commission for sketch plan last year and was approved. However, when preliminary plat came along, the question had been raised regarding the need for a map amendment, and the Planning Commission did determine that that was necessary, and so the we did not move forward with the preliminary plat at that time, and so instead the applicant has submitted a map amendment, as was discussed with the previous application. The Planning Commission reviewed that, and they ended up recommending approval for this request for townhomes by a vote of 5-2.
Any questions of Ms. Farrell? Would the developer like to make a presentation?
I'm Kevin Steele again, 3301 Salt Beck Street. Got a similar presentation on this, but most of it I won't. You going to get that one? Okay, well, never mind. I will just point out that several of the concerns that were raised related to that'll work, I can talk to Matt, related to buffering of the project, and because of this Park West Boulevard, and you can see from this aerial, the site was cleared actually in 1999 when we developed the Park West Boulevard, and we planned it for development back then, and for whatever reason it didn't take off. And in 2009, it was approved for 48 townhomes, and we started development and built the vaulted, and we had to put it on the shelf again. But you can tell that there's a buffer that was retained along Park West Boulevard and Queens Gateway, and our intent is, and we designed the project around keeping 25 feet of existing vegetation on Park West Boulevard, and then, like we've done elsewhere in the community, if we don't believe that the buffer's sufficient, we'll go in and supplement it with additional plantings. And so that was the number one concern that was raised on the project. Number two was traffic or access. Originally, there was an access off the roundabout. We deleted that. The access would be from Queens Gate and a right-in, right-out for Park West Boulevard here, so we won't have people making left turns off Park West Boulevard into the project. And we did that. We made that change at the request of Brad Morrison, and I think that's really the main point I wanted to make for you.
What's the configuration on that property of the units? Just straight lines?
The property is 200 feet deep, so there's a 50-foot public right-of-way, a 25-foot buffer in the front, 50-foot public right-of-way, and then 125-foot residential townhome lot that would back up to the airport. So the property would face Park West Boulevard, and the road in the front would feel more like a frontage road or alleyway. And again, we'll be sure we maintain the existing buffers.
And how many access points out?
Two.
Two.
Park West Boulevard and Queensgate. To, if you're heading 217 from Parkland Boulevard, because we'll have the right in, right out, you'd make the right, go to the roundabout, and then, you know, turn around and head the other direction. So that's the plan. You can see it's overlaid on the aerial. So we've also, within the right-of-way, we've shifted the pavement section back towards the units to allow us to not have to clear the buffer to put in the water line.
What's the buffer to the airport land?
It's only 10 feet is what's the required buffer at the rear of the lot. From the airport to from the edge of the boundary to the runway is several thousand feet.
Any questions, Mr. Steele?
So, go ahead. This, unlike our previous discussion, this property doesn't have multiple zonings on it. It has, this would come under the floating zoning changes you're asked.
Well,
is that correct?
Theoretically does have multiple zonings. It's R3 and OP. And what I would say is, you know, that 1990 map that we're here today to amend to reflect this development, you know, in the PD itself it says it's not intended to show the final land uses, and that the uses may be moved around to react to market conditions, and that's what we did for 18 years. When we, even up to the point of our sketch plan for this project being approved in June, and then in September it was denied, and the Planning Commission requested that we amend the map and staff, and so we agreed to do that rather than fight the legal battle over what the PD says or doesn't say. You know, we've gone to great lengths to carefully plan this project like we have the other 1,700 acres and believe that it's harmonious for this thing.
Mr. Steele, how many units is this total?
49. Yes, sir.
In one of your previous slides, and the total, did you say 1,700 total acres?
1,700 total acres, yes, sir.
Could you go back to your total number of units you have available in the mix of those units?
And, yes, sir, right.
And I'll get to my question so that I'm not ambiguous, nor am I aloof. Let me just get this to you. I'm struggling with this use of this land, with that property, 10 feet buffering to the airport. So my question behind the question that I really want to ask you is, can these 49 units easily go somewhere else in that 1,700 acres?
No, sir. We've consumed the majority of the development land. Out of 1,700 acres, from the first, let me go over your first question, land use. We had 1,450 units of R1. We didn't use any R1. I footnoted that to point out that we have 485 of the 1,959 R3 units. We built R1 size. We just used R3 setbacks to give us flexibility to avoid and save trees. So it looks as if we didn't do R1, but we really did. R3, we had 2,400 units we could have consumed. We've consumed to date 1,959 with 441 remaining. Townhomes 545. We've platted or approved previously 437. That does include these 49. So after this project, there are 108 units that theoretically could be used, although we have no plans today for that. This is the last project that we have planned for RTH today. And then multifamily we talked about earlier. So there's 3,001 units of the 5,281 we could have developed at this point that we've consumed, and that does not include you know, our plans. Really, what's left is Cambridge Square, which is a project that we're getting close. We're on the drawing board again, and we'll be submitting soon, or have submitted, and we'll be working town to try to move that project forward. And then primarily there are about 25 acres that we don't own on Bessemer Road that sits undeveloped today. And, you know, other than those two pieces, we're pretty well done. The rest is open space. We've protected it as wetlands and buffers and recreational areas. And, you know, this is one of the final development sites that we have.
Any other questions, Mr. Steele? Chris? Mark? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anybody in the... Would you like to speak? Mr. Santos, come forward.
Here's Santos, 1690, Greystone Boulevard. You know, guys, I just have to say, here we go again. You know, we have a developer that wants to rezone their property.
I do. Just, Mr. Santos, you know the rules. Come on over.
Gary Santos, 1690 Greystone Boulevard. Here we go again. You know, we have a developer that wants to rezone their property to a multifamily, which is going to put more children in our schools, more cars on the road. I looked at the last development that he talked about, and he was excited about people being able to walk across the street and shop and things like that. However, on this piece of property, he has the opportunity to create that same scenario by allowing the folks across the street to come over there and shop, but it doesn't fit there for some reason. I would encourage the committee to vote against this because, you know, last night we had a meeting, over 200 citizens came, and 100% of them said that we need to slow down on multifamily. Some of them were from Park West as well. They're concerned about the growth. They're concerned about growth issues that are related to that growth, whether it's the schools or traffic or congestion and things like that. And I think if he builds this the way it's zoned, the folks in those areas are there will be able to come across the street and shop and do some of the things that he mentioned in the last parcel that we talked about. So I think if it's good for the last parcel, it's good for this parcel as well. And I just think that, you know, growth is a big issue, as you know. Congestion on our streets and in our schools is a big issue right now. And I just would encourage the committee to please vote against this so that we can have commercial there as it was intended. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Santos. Yes, sir. Please come forward. Name and address, sir.
Grant Sidwell, resident of 1721 James Basford Place, unlike Mr. Santos. I haven't been here much. I don't know the rules. Correct my protocol as necessary. My first time here, resident of Park West, 8 years. Could I go back to the slide showing the densities? Yes. Did I understand these figures to be adjusted for Cambridge Square already? No, they're not. Then, looking forward at Cambridge Square, the proposal that's been submitted and was published by the town on the 5th of January, multifamily 261 remaining. You'll see in the Cambridge Square that there's a proposal for 262 with 27 remaining. My math says there should be only 19 remaining. I look forward to the closing agenda item today with a general discussion on multifamily development, density, and mixed-use planning improvements. That's really the issue here, and the density, I think, is way overdone.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to speak? Any further comments,
yes.
Mr. Young?
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. I think, first, to Mr. Sanders' point, you know, Park West Boulevard is 100-foot right-of-way. Today it's two lanes, but it will be four lanes. At that point in Park West Boulevard, there's no other commercial around it. Cars are traveling at 35 miles an hour to encourage pedestrians across that road. It would be irresponsible on our part. I don't think it's the appropriate place for it. Again, I'll go back to what the PD says. The PD gives us the authority or the flexibility to move densities around, which we've done for 18 years. We've been very good stewards of that. The authority granted to us in the PD. We developed 3,000 units when we could have done 5,000. And this is the, you know, we're in the last 10%, which is always the hardest. We did get approval with this project as townhomes in 2009, once already. We do have a sketch plan approval, which gives us vested rights in the property. And I believe it's
appropriate, we ask that you follow the planning commission and approve the relocation of the use to this.
Thank you, sir. I'll just make a statement myself as to not supporting it. I just don't like the proximity to the airport. The traffic patterns of airplanes, as we've seen here just in the last 6 months, we've had a death out there, and you know, you never know where they're going to fall, and it's just too close for me, for my comfort. But that's just my opinion, and that's how I will vote. So I'm looking for a motion from the committee, unless there's further discussion.
Is there an aerial of the entire project, 700 acres? Okay, no problem. So I mean, even just that acres there. So the undeveloped land that we see between the two developers there, I mean, that's not wetlands.
That's all wetland and wetland buffer, and it's all been protected. In fact, one of the piece on the northern end of the tracks highlighted there are also wetland buffers. That'll be protected and not developed. So the development will all occur in the area where you see.
Any other questions?
Any other motion? I'll make a motion to deny the proposal.
I'll second.
Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Yeah, aye.
Thank you.
Denied 3-0. Item E, Ms. Farrell.
Yes, the final item that we have from the Planning Commission is also a text amendment to the Bell Hall Plan Development. You, as the committee and council, have seen a couple of requests recently where there have been request specifically to remove the maximum lot coverage. This has been in this Wonder Park area as well as recently in the commercial area of Charles National. This maximum lot coverage is unique to these plan developments. It is not consistent with what the town allows. The town does not provide maximum lot coverage for these commercial development areas. And so, therefore, this particular text amendment, which was proposed by staff because you have received several requests, will make these PDs consistent with the town regulations, where maximum lot coverage will be determined by buffer requirements, parking requirements, and any other site constraints that may come into play, such as drainage. And so the Planning Commission reviewed this and have unanimously recommended approval.
Please approve. Second.
Any discussion? Any comment from the audience by anybody?
This is not required by our code, is it?
Our town code is not.
Call for the question. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. Okay, the final item today is a discussion on multifamily development, density, and mixed-use plan developments, and how to proceed with options for stakeholder input. Before I let Ms. Farrell talk, I consider this item in two parts. First, a discussion on multifamily development, density, and mixed-use plan developments. And then the second part, how to proceed with options for stakeholder input. The second part of this was came down from council last month, back to the planning committee, this committee, to discuss how we're going to get stakeholder input from all the various parties who are probably be involved in this. Subsequently, Ms. Stokes Marshall, who is the chair of this committee, and I sat down and we put together a preliminary list of stakeholders, and then we proceeded to open it up to Mr. Smith and Mr. O'Neill for further input, along with a couple of other council people who are going to be involved in planning going forward. We have a long list of stakeholders. It got to be looking like it was going to be one long process. We didn't want that long process. We needed to get back to council with recommendations on these two items. So we're now, the first part, we'll talk about the densities and multifamily and all that. But the second part is how do we proceed to get everybody involved in this in a fairly expedient way. So, but for starters, let's talk about discussion of multifamily development, density, and mixed-use plan developments. And Ms. Farrell?
Yes, sir. I provided a presentation to you all last month, and this is essentially the same presentation. There have been a few modifications, but I will go back through that to try to provide you all with some clarification on what is what things are seeing going on, for especially over the past year, but then also to make sure that everybody is aware of the different provisions that we have in our code. So for starters, we have updated the numbers. We had an opportunity, actually very late yesterday afternoon, to finalize all the numbers from the end of December. So the presentation that was sent to you previously didn't include the December numbers, but that's how we put that together. It was so we've now been able to calculate all of those, and so I will review those with you first so you can see what's in here, the votes were. First of all, with respect to the growth rate, you'll see that what we ended up with for the growth rate for 2014 was a 3.43%, so this was down a little bit from last year, from the year 2013. You can see the total number of dwelling units that we had for the year. This is certificate of occupancy. The next slide, I'll talk about permits. So we want to make sure that with, we talked about this a little bit last month. The growth rate is predicted is based on certificate of occupancy. So these units have been completed and have the ability to be occupied by residents. And so that is the end year numbers that we have for that, the growth rate. Next is permits issued, and so this would be, this now includes permits that were issued as late as December 31st, perhaps, but this would be all permits that were issued for the year 2014 have now been added to this chart. So what you can see here is that with single family detached and attached, so that would be the SF and TH that you see on the chart, the TH being townhomes, we have 622. For single family and then 89 for townhomes. We did have a couple of duplexes this year. And then moving over into the multifamily category, we did have a high number of multifamily permits. And this is dwelling units, total number of dwelling units for 2014 were 596. So in looking at this number, I guess you can these numbers and comparing them at least to 2013, you can see that the single family numbers were mostly consistent. They were actually slightly less for 2014 than they were for 2013, but the greatest increase was clearly with the multifamily, that you see by about 200 plus units there. And then so if you go and look at the totals, that's where you really see the difference between 2013 and 2014 was the multifamily that were issued. Last year, kind of at the end of summer, we had put together a very in-depth analysis, and I'll cover that on the next slide in just a second, of what was the ratio, in the town right now with single family versus multifamily, and there has, for many years, all the way back into pretty much the 1980s, as they've been either by policy or just general a feeling of the council, the elected officials at the time, is to typically try to maintain about a 70-30 ratio with single family to multifamily. So this is by year that you see on this particular slide. So how many permits are issued per year and what is that yearly comparison of single family to multifamily? So again, highlighting the high number of multifamily that we had this past year, that ratio was a 54-46. And so, again, it's typically kind of just been the thought of policy with our elected officials to try to maintain an approximate 70-30. We're still in the 70-30. That's on the next slide. If you don't go ahead with that. We still are within that range. I've provided just so you can kind of see what's occurred. We did provide this information to you initially at the end of August, as I stated, so that's what the bottom numbers are, the bottom chart is, so you can see what's occurred since August through of this year. So what we have on the basically the top row, and by the top row I mean this row right here, is these are units that either are existing today, and this will be the entire town complex and all units that exist, or are actually under construction. So anything that you see here, this percentage represents that which comes up. We do single family attaches or townhomes are counted in the single family category in this and represents 73% as opposed to the overall with multifamily being just about 27%. This number here on the bottom, it includes everything that's up here, but it also includes approved units. So one of the best examples probably would be Carolina Park, for example, that is approved, and it has a set number of units that can actually be built. And so that is represented in this number, but anything that's built in Carolina Park, for example, is already up into this number. So we have updated these numbers based on everything that has occurred through the end of the year, 2014, and that is where the ratio sits right now with everything that is built and under construction or as noted, total units on the bottom. So we're basically about 73.5 and then about 26.5% for the multifamily. That is what is new in this presentation. And then moving on to some things that you saw with last month, last presentation. This is just a review, a reminder of what we have in our zoning code, and it is the density table. So this does show what the densities are. And just to remind everybody, for example, low density neighborhood, the typical corresponding zoning district that would come with that would be R1 and R2. Those are the 10,000 square foot lots, 8,000 square foot lots. Medium density is R3 and R4. And you see multifamily, and we do have, of course, the rural densities up here as well as some of the more unique zoning districts that we have, such as the waterfront building. We talked about this last time, the calculation of density. And so density has, and I've not paraphrased it, but cut certain portions out just to focus in on what I thought would be most relevant for this particular discussion. It is density calculated as the number of dwelling units per acre of land within the boundaries of the residential project. But there is a provision that other land area within the parcel boundaries outside of the residential area can be included if it is a mixed-use project. And so you've seen this recently. There was the Johnson development that came to you recently was desired to calculate the density over the entire tract. And so in order to be able to do that, and we talked a lot about this with that particular application, and there was a focus on this ability to be functionally integrated and so that the uses are truly mixed with one another in order to be able to use the entire acreage to calculate the density. When that cannot be accomplished or it has not been accomplished, then the density should only be calculated where the residential development is. Plan developments is something else that staff wanted to make sure that we highlighted for you as part of this discussion, because this discussion was to focus on multifamily development and densities, and in particular where we may have abilities for in our code for higher densities or density incentives. And so this particular slide is talking about mixed-use plan development. The mixed-use plan development, if designed properly, will be able to take advantage of the ability to calculate the density over the entire tract, as it was just explained on the previous slide. And in within the mixed-use PDs, then the densities are as were shown here on the slide. So in the northern end of town, this would be above Long Point Road, the densities are actually exactly the same as they would be for the normal zoning district. So just a second ago, I showed you where low density is 3 units per acre. in mixed-use PD, if you're above the Alcom's connector, it's 3 units per acre still. But you, of course, have the ability to calculate the density of the entire tract. So that's the difference. And the ability to, of course, within a mixed-use PD, to be able to mix those uses with one another. A mixed-use PD that is south of the Long Point Road and Alcom's connector, using those two roads as the way to determine the densities, it is higher. You'll see that in the low density, instead of 3, it becomes 5, and the medium, instead of 6, it becomes 8, and the high, it goes from 9 to 12, and then finally, in the commercial, it remains the same. The maximum is 12 units per acre. Next slide. Moving on to density incentives, because previous slide weren't really incentives, that is the code. You don't have to meet certain criteria other than to be able to show that it is truly mixed use. Those would be the densities that are allowed. So I'm going to speak next to the ones that are considered to be incentives and go through those particular zoning districts to review. First of all, going to the mixed-use plan development, I just went over that one, and I showed you that the highest density was 12 units per acre. However, there are provisions within the waterfront gateway into what we call Cooper area, so this is basically Patriots Point area, that there can be higher densities if certain conditions are met, and these are the incentives. So there can be 16 units per acre or 20 units per acre if there is a set aside of open space as described, 10% for open space, 20% for 20 units per acre. And then no matter what, for either one of these increases, all of these must be met as well. So there must be a traffic study done to address acceptable level of service, parking garage have to be provided. There would have to be increased height in order for this to be accomplished, and then finally, the map has to show what the data. In the urban corridor, so what you see up here on the top are the base densities. So base density in Coleman, Binsire, and then the Johnny Dodds neighborhood office district. If it is a residential-only project, so it is not a mixed-use project, it is 16 units per acre. If it is mixed-use, then the base density becomes 20. Johnny Dodds does have, for the hospitality ED and then the health ED districts, and these are kind of the two impacts of Johnny Dodds, so closest to the bridge and then closest to East Cooper Hospital. They do have higher densities for their base, 20 units per acre for residential only and 30 for mixed use. The density incentives do not apply at all in Chuck Dolly, so their base is just 16 and 20. They do not have the ability to take advantage of any of these increases that you see below. So talking about the density incentives, where there can be a 20% increase off of the base density, there are a couple of things that can be figured into that. First of all, a property has to be at least 4 acres. Second, they do have to provide workforce housing within the development. There also has to be at least 4,000 square feet worth of public open space. This is if the property is 1 acre or less, or if it's greater than that, that has to be 10% of the project area. And finally, you can't have a curb cut onto the boulevard street. Instead, it actually has to be designed as a street. It can't look like your typical curb cut into a Walgreens or something like that. And then finally, if a project is mixed use and it meets all of these criteria, there is not a density limitation on those projects. The density would ultimately be determined by the building height, what they could park, and any kind of other constraints, drainage, and air, so on, that may exist on the property.
Can you say that last part again, Christine? Just repeat the last.
All right. If a development is mixed use and it has met every single one of these incentives right here, then there is not a density limitation. So the total number of dwelling units will not be a definite number like a 30 or a 35, Instead, if the number, total number of units that can be accomplished on the property would really be determined by what they could park, what they are maybe have in terms of developable land with respect to drainage on the property, any kind of access into the property, whatever. Those sorts of regulations would end up determining how many units they could add to the property. Does that answer that?
It does. Thank you.
Okay, and I believe this is the last one. This is the Waterfront Gateway Cooper. The base density of this is 12 units per acre, as we showed. But then the bonus densities that could exist there, it's very similar to the PD that I was just describing earlier, in terms of there are, in order to be able to have the higher densities of 16 units per acre, or 20 units per acre, is really the same area that we're talking about over near Patriots Point. There has to be a 15% set aside for open space, and it's very prescriptive in terms of what type of open space that should be. And then 20 units per acre, there's 20% education requirement. And this is more emphasized on natural open spaces in that particular area. And then finally, this is parking structures should be provided. This is, no one has used this. This is fairly new. The Planning Commission did this perhaps about a year and a half ago, put this into the code really more in anticipation of anything that could be developed in the Patriots Point area. I believe that's the last slide. It is. So that we have covered is, as I stated, updated numbers at the end of the year, numbers, and then all of the incentives or plan developments that may allow higher densities than would be allowed within the standard zone.
Thank you, Christine. Can we go back to the charts?
You're very good, President. You're thorough.
To the density chart, preferably. There you go.
These are base. These are base density. So as I was explaining, the slide was up earlier. Community conservation, just for example, is limited to 3 units per acre, and that's, like, y'all are familiar with that zoning. Really, the only corresponding zoning district with that is also called community conservation. So that is the land use category. These are the land use categories here, low density, which are R1s, R2s, and limited to 3 units per acre, and so on. So,
and that's throughout the town, or that's south of or north of?
No, this is throughout the town.
Throughout the town.
So if the comprehensive plan map shows that land use right there, then the density is 3 units per acre, unless, you know, this is where it becomes starts to fold into these TDs. If somebody came in and wanted to ask for mixed-use plan development and land use recommendation was low-density residential, and the property was south, for Central Mont Pleasant, for example, mm-hmm. south of the Isle of Palms connector, then that number, and that was on a different chart, I just got it right there, that it can be 5 units. But if you go back down, if it's just R1, it's 3. If it's only R1. If it is high density and the corresponding zoning district with that is pretty much just multifamily, then the density is 9 and it's per acre.
Let's talk a little bit about the mixed use developments.
Yes,
where we have multifamily involved, as well as retail, as well as hotel, you name it. And we're using the entire tract to determine the density of the multifamily. Am I saying that right?
Well, not just, it would not necessarily be restricted just to multifamily, but to determine the density, whatever the unit type is.
So, okay. But the living part of it, the living units?
Yes.
Would be determined by the entire acreage of the tract.
If it meets that definition right there. If had, and this is, again, just to point to one project that we looked at very recently, you know, and you'd be very familiar with. That was the question and the concern, as you recall, when this was originally submitted to the town, it was the staff that it was not integrated, and it was not mixed. And they ended up making some revisions to better integrate the commercial and the residential in order to meet that provision.
And I think there's a feeling at the staff level that perhaps that definition is ambiguous. Mm-hmm. It needs further clarification by council. Mm-hmm.
I would agree with that.
Is it really mixed use or is it not mixed use?
And that's how you get these exaggerated numbers on multifamily, is because we're using a 10-acre tract when there's really only the multifamily is occupying maybe 2 acres. And that, to me, that's a concern. And that probably needs to be something we take a look at, too. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Chris or Mark?
A couple thoughts right out of the gate. One, I appreciate Thomasina and your comments earlier about the process in which we're going to use to go through this, and having all stakeholders have equal opportunity to have input at this, in my opinion, is critical and necessary. And once we started forming that list, it did quickly, as you stated, Elton, earlier, that I agree with it. It got overwhelming. So I think we need to look at that process and how we're going to do that in the most efficient manner, so that's not overwhelming and take us 3 years and have some unintended consequences yet again during that process of trying to get through this process. So I'm excited. I think the list of questions going out to the, Elton, correct me if I'm wrong, did that list quickly grow up to about 25 or 30 different groups that we were talking about, groups, organizations, entities that would be classified as stakeholders. And I want to reiterate that this is not an exclusive list. This is in an effort to be all-inclusive, so we're not looking to eliminate anyone. So if your group, or including the individual, is not represented, it's not because we're not trying to get you there. So please speak up and make sure you have. It was also brought up previously about where this started in the motion that I withdrew about perhaps eliminating the bonus densities altogether. I think that is probably across the board. Probably something we should take a serious look at, and I will say that that is something that I could probably wrap my arms around and support. I'll go public and make that statement as well. Tightening up the definition of mixed use, we've seen that happen already in this multiple occasion. You know, is it part of it? Is all of it? As you stated earlier, I would hope that through this we will definitely tighten up the definition of mixed use, and then the million-dollar question, what is the right base density? What should it be in the urban quarter? Is it currently it's 10 now? 16? 16 now? Should it be 18? Should it be 10? What is that right number? And what should it be? So I think throughout the process, and I'll just wrap up by saying I want to be very, very careful that we don't yet again have anyone adversely affected by unintended consequences. That's something we got to be very mindful of, and I know and appreciate and thank staff in advance for making sure that we're aware of all those factors. So that's kind of where I am, Elton. I'm looking forward to this process. I don't know that we'll have resolution here at this meeting today, but just want to go on the record as to some of the thoughts where I am and where my head is at this point, and looking forward to a meaningful conversation.
Thank you. Chris?
A few thoughts that I have. You know, I think we need to be focused about exactly which parts of town and what we're interested in pursuing. For example, I don't have issues with the waterfront gateway areas. I think what's going on at Patriots Point and areas like that, the development, the things that'll go there are a different animal than kind of what we're looking at some of the other places. One of the things that, you know, I talked about a little bit in December, that
you know, is important to me as we kind of move forward is we have to look at what we're incentivizing, and you know, I think the draw is what does the town need more of, and for the last 3+ years, what I think has become clear is the town's going to grow residential population if we did nothing. If we incentivize nothing, if we didn't do anything, what this council needs to figure out or continue to find a way to do is how do we incentivize economic development? How do we incentivize job growth and creation? And I know when the crab happened and when we looked at Coleman Boulevard, the concern was that as town center grew, you know, Oakland Plantation came on board, things like that, that the retail and the commercial was moving north and was moving away from Coleman Boulevard. I don't think the intent of the crab, and I could be corrected if I was wrong, was how do we fill up the areas vacated by businesses with more residents. I think it was how do we bring about economic vitality to an area that was beginning to look a little older and was looking to be a little worn. And I think that the incentive of mixed use was that if you would come and if you would develop and if you would bring commercial and retail components to this, that we would allow you some residential to go with that. And I think, unfortunately, through largely unintended consequences, today we've arrived at an area where we're getting token mixed-use offerings to bonus up multifamily, and which I don't think was ever the intent, and unfortunately that's where we've landed. So I think that that's really what needs to be corrected. And, you know, unfortunately we've put staff and Christiane in a position where she's had to make calls about bonus density, and so has council, without a clear definition of what is mixed-use, which I think is, to your point, Mark, is, you know, and how do we go about doing that? And I think that's the big question before us is, do we say, you know, for every floor of multifamily, you've got to provide a floor of commercial, or for every, you know, in areas like this. And that's not necessarily, but just as we look at it, I think the intent was to have retail on the first floor, potentially office above, and then maybe have one or two floors of potentially multifamily above. It wasn't to have a project that looks like the Boulevard or feels like the Boulevard. So I think as we go forward, that's really what we should be driving towards is not only, because everything in the discussion about density is multifamily. That's what we've looked at. I think let's incentivize the economic development. Let's incentivize the commercial and the retail development to come, because that's what the town needs. We need jobs and we need retail, and I think we've had some successes with Heritage Trust Bank. I think Triangle Bar and Grill, I think Page's Ochre Grill, I think some of these restaurants and the activities ends, and there are things here that are working. These restaurants, if you drive by on a Saturday, Sunday, or any night of the week, they're busy. So in that sense, I think it's working. But, you know, I think we need to, and you said it well, Mark, take a hard look at how we're offering these densities and what we're encouraging. And I understand there's an economics component to this. And right now, bank financing for multifamily is good. And for office and professional, they want owner-occupied. And, you know, we've got to figure out how we can help encourage some of the things that we want to have over there. So I think from a procedural and process standpoint, I think we've got a list of some questions. We've identified some stakeholders, and I think what this committee needs to come up with is not come and complain about all the things that have happened, but bring recommendations that this council and this committee can hear, that staff can then vet, and then this committee can then make a recommendation to council. So I think what we're looking for from different stakeholders who understand the economics and understand these things is, what would you do if you were us? What would it look like? And let us hear the reasoning. Let us hear the purpose. What's appropriate? Do we need to have bonus densities for senior living, or do we not? Do we need bonus densities for single family, or how do we encourage that, or how do we discourage that? So I think a lot of our focus is in the overlay district. I think it's in the big loop as we kind of go around. I don't we've got base densities in other places, and I don't really want to strip those from folks outside of the overlay area. So I think that's really what we're looking at, unless someone else disagrees or has different thoughts about that.
No, I second you on several points. Now, the crab, I think I'm the only person in the room that served on the crab. I'm not sure about that, but looking around, I think I am. I mean, the crab was a design thing for Coleman Boulevard's revitalization, plain and simple. And we knew we were going to get more people early than businesses. And that has been true. So far, all we've wrestled with is the density issues downtown, you know, where people wanted to live. They didn't want to live in houses. They wanted to live on top of each other with play areas and all that. And we've accomplished that. Now, I agree. I think the density issue has been overboard a little bit, and I think we need to take a look at that real hard. But I think the CRAB, in all its good intentions and long-serving work, they've accomplished what they set out to do. You see it on Coleman. Now we're getting activity on the businesses. We went to a grand opening yesterday. It's going to bring probably two or three attorney firms over here on McGrath-Darby. Now that's not on Coleman, but I guarantee you those folks will come downtown to eat. They're going to come down to play after hours. So, you know, that's what we're trying to accomplish, and that's what we have accomplished with the CRAB. I think the CRAB can now set aside. We don't have to refer to it anymore. We just got to now tweak what's going on with the residential on Coleman, especially, or in the overlay district. The other thing you mentioned was economic development, I think, and you're big on that. Thomasina, not being here, I've got to stick up for her a little bit. Workforce housing. We have an awful time with workforce housing, and something's got to be done about it. And if we're going to incent things, we've got to incent workforce housing somewhere. And it's going to take the town doing it, or we're not going to ever get it. And all of our people that work at the restaurants and other places in town, they don't live here. They live out. I can remember when the Silkworm was on Coleman Boulevard. He had to bus his employees in from Allendale and Monk's Corner and even up to Eugene. I mean, he couldn't, his people, and we're talking about 300 or 400 people, if he had to bus in every day to work at his place. Silkworm's long gone. I don't know how many of y'all remember the Silkworm, but it was right down there where your office was.
My office is in the old Silkworm building.
So, anyway, I agree. I think we've got to tweak the density part of it. So, we're going to let the public speak here in a minute, whenever you all
agree. Just a couple comments to add on to what Chris was saying. When I said across the board eliminating the consideration of eliminating the bonus density across the board, in my mind that includes the single family homes as well, having a discussion of that as well. You know, and you mentioned a couple of commercial projects that I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about, you know, let's park on the mixed use for a moment. We've seen some good planning. We've seen some good results here in our town for with the mixed use as you talked about, Chris, with the commercial and the residential, I apologize, I'm remiss, but next to Bilo.
Shenmore Village.
Thank you. Shenmore, yeah, good project, good planning, good project, and it does work. So we don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater, as they say, but I think just maybe revisiting it and look at that, and I'm excited about this conversation where it's going.
Any comment from staff? Any more comment, Christine?
I'll say this. I think procedure, as we talk about where we're going, I think what's good for us to do is this presentation, I think, is going to be helpful to the groups that are going to come. So if we can pull this presentation together, and I think some of the questions that we've circulated largely around, you know, should project location influence number of units, and should socioeconomic conditions like affordability, senior housing, things like that, should that affect density, you know, to those that are able to speak intelligent, what is the market demanding, and then what's acceptable to residents? And I think those are the questions that largely sum up. And then what is mixed use? What does mixed use look like?
Really define that, getting there, button that up.
Let's get those questions and this information out to stakeholders and the groups that we want to hear from. Let's schedule some meetings and get some folks in here with some recommendations. Then I think we can make some decisions.
And Elton, it's interesting. We heard a lot about that transparency committee meeting on Monday with the communication. And I hear you loud and clear just talking about, let's get this word out, staff, and make sure that the facts are out so that when people are on social media and having conversations in the neighborhood and HOAs are meeting and town committee meetings are happening, please, let's make sure that we're getting conversations centered and based on factual information and not knee-jerk non-factual information. I'm not making any insinuations there. I'm just simply saying, let's make sure we as a town are doing, that we're labeled an over-communicator, that we're communicating the facts so that people are basing decisions, comments on facts.
All right, well, let's stick to the original plan today, and that was, we have two parts to this item, number three. And the first was a discussion of multifamily development, density, and mixed-use plan developments. So we've heard from staff, and we've heard from ourselves. So I'm going to open it up to the public, and if you would like to come up and take your 2 minutes and speak to this part of the issue right now, not the stakeholder input process, let's save that for just a little bit later. But right now, I'd like anybody who'd like to speak to the density issues before you, before us, please raise your hand and come forward. Go ahead.
I just have a question.
Look, please come forward, and I need your name and address.
My name is Mary Horace. I live at 3224 Pimentel Crest at Dunes West. I just have a question about the calculation of density. When you're considering the total development and calculating density, do the wetlands count as open space?
They can. The wetlands can, the way our code is written, freshwater wetlands can be used in calculating density. Saltwater critical areas cannot.
Okay. The reason I ask that is because I think most people and most citizens think of open space as a place for a park or a playground, not as unbuildable space for the developer. So he just, you know, so we're seeing a situation where anything unbuildable, that's open space, and then we can double up over on the other stuff. So it's getting a little out of hand. My only other comment is on that slide that had the by year, the total types of units by year. Could you put that up? That one. No, that's not it.
Yes,
that. I guess what you can look at here is, yes, you're still within it. But, you know, if you're a citizen, what you're really looking at is here.
You know, we're dealing with 2011, 2014, grossly out of proportion for the rest of the history of Mount Pleasant and that slide.
Ms. Horace, don't you think that's a change of the times, too? I mean, how people want to live?
I mean, people live on what's available. I don't know that everybody would want to live that way if they had an option that they could afford. You know, that's all you can afford here. And, you know, it really infuriates me to see some comment in the paper that the millennials will live in these stacked-up units on Coleman and pay these ridiculous rents. Well, they're paying them. I have a 26-year-old son. I mean, he happens to be out of town, but you know, I'm looking for a place for him to live, and you have to pay the ridiculous rent. So you don't have an option of a less ridiculous rent. So.
Thank you, Ms. Horace. Anybody else? Gary? Two minutes, sir.
Sir, Gary Santos, 1690 Greystone Boulevard. Glad you got this slide up. I think I'm the only one that was here back when, in the year 2000, when you see the growth rate is probably the highest on this slide. At that time, council decided to do a permit allocation plan, and I know you all haven't spoke about that yet. It's just a tool that was used to slow the growth down, and as you see, during the ensuing years, it did slow it down some so the infrastructure could catch up. And then I think in 2009, when it went away, as you can see, it's picked up again tremendously, and really, we're in 2014, we're at the second highest on here from 2000. So I'm just hoping that also the permit allocation plan will just be considered as a tool only, as well as other issues. Can you go to the bonus density one, please, if you would? Yes. In my humble opinion, this is what we need to get rid of. We don't need to give bonuses to developers to come to Mount Pleasant to build. People are coming to Mount Pleasant. It's a great place to live. You have developers that will come here and build, and I don't think we need to reward them for doing that. And I think if we're able to get rid of these bonus densities here, I think that growth will immediately slow down such that infrastructure will be able to catch up. So that's one thing as well. I heard some of you guys say that just now, so I'm really excited about hearing y'all talk about that. And lastly, I know you talk about workforce housing, and that's extremely important. There is some workforce housing out there. I just bought a place just now that's running about $185,000, three bedroom, two full baths, that you can do it, that's in Mount Pleasant, right in the heart of Mount Pleasant, central Mount Pleasant. There are some areas out there, and I think we can do some buildings like that. It's not a huge place. It's actually a duplex. But the point is, people who are making less than, you know, the amount of money that it would cost to build in some of these, you know, nicer subdivisions can actually live in Mount Pleasant in a place for about $185,000. And so that's what we need to do. I know I keep hearing developers tell us that they need to make more money on the other end of their project in order to afford to do that, but I don't believe that. I think that there's ways that they can do that, and clearly I'm a prime example. I live in workforce housing, and I think it's a prime example of things that we can do. So I'm excited to hear you say that as well about workforce housing, because it can be done, and we need to look at ways of doing it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Please come forward. Name and address?
Yeah, I'm Gerald Scurry. I live in Laurel Lakes at 1386 Woodlock Road, right directly behind Central Mount Pleasant that we all know about. And my question is this, you know, in the, as we all know, the developer pulled the latest request for that changing the amendment. And what I look at this a little bit differently, and I'm going to ask this question to Christiane, but I look at the build-out of what he proposed, which was 1,045 dwelling units, 140-room hotel, 74,000 square feet of retail, 280,000 square feet of office, and 415 of a continuing care retirement community. But my question is, when you take the national averages of how many people live and work in these places, and you look at a build-out, okay, 100% build-out, which would obviously take a number of years, well, you come up with somewhere between 4,500 people and 5,000 people working and living in that area, which is about a net of 80 acres now from what they've already developed in the Haven Apartments and the medical office building. So my question is, when planners look at densities, do they look at people, the amount of people that are going to live there? I mean, that's my question. Is it just a simple per acre density? For instance, 2.3 people per dwelling unit is a conservative average. So if you look at 1,045, that's 2,400 people. Now, how do you fit all that in there between Rifle Range Road and Midtown, you know, Midtown? I mean, that's my question.
Well, I think that we do look at that, maybe not necessarily quite as people, to a certain extent we might, but we look at that when we look at the impact.
Right. Okay.
And so the focus there is certainly on the cars, the
vehicles. Trips,
that's generally the main focus. But the impact assessment will look at people at least to the extent of schools. Certainly, how many children will this typically produce? It'll look at it in terms of what will the impact be on our municipal services. So it might not try to quantify how many people might be there. Both residential and commercial offices, or what may be, but it's certainly still reviewed really nicely.
Well, isn't that important? I mean, if you're looking at an infill site like Central Mount Pleasant, that's surrounded by three subdivisions, I mean, to think of that many people, I mean, I live in Laurel Lakes, there's probably 200 people that live in there or something. I don't know what it is, but you put 5,000 people next door, I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me.
Every property owner has the opportunity to present a project.
Sure.
Consideration.
Yeah.
And that project comes in, it's reviewed by staff, and comments are provided to town council for their consideration. After that, it's not up to Christine Fowler whether that project's approved.
Well, I'm not saying that. I'm not asking her that. I'm just making the point that I think you've got to look at bodies as well as square footages and densities of units. I mean, it's people. And you're going to dump all that stuff out on Rifle Range Road. And I know the staff did a very good report on Central Mount Pleasant, by the way. I was very impressed with it. And that's why the developer pulled his application. Now, supposedly he's coming back for in the next meeting to get a waiver of that. And I don't know how you do that. But anyway, just my concerns, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Joe? Paul?
Yeah, go ahead.
Name and address, sir.
Zach Bearden, 918 Camps Drive, Mount Pleasant. I just encouraged by some of the comments I heard here today. Mr. O'Neill, your comments about economic development, I think you're spot on. Just one concern is that a lot of the business owners that own larger office companies, tech companies, those types of employers really look to where the people are going to live. And we've lost some significant employers over the years. I think we should consider how they evaluate their decision-making process, and some of that relates to housing. And Mr. Carrier, Mr. Smith, I think you guys all made comments as to who works in these types of commercial developments that we want to see, or more types of commercial users. The second thing is Mr. Santos and Mr. Smith, Mr. Carrier mentioned about workforce housing, and I think that's a critical issue for the town. It's in the comprehensive plan, and the types of businesses that we have, the commercial service-based businesses, really need those types of people living near there. We don't need to be busing them in or having them drive in to create more traffic from Somerville, West Ashley, and other markets. I think we should be able to have some homegrown employees available to some of our service-based businesses. And then Mr. Santos, you referenced a unit that was available in Mount Pleasant under $200,000. There's not many out there, and I'd like to see more. And I think that probably the unit you're describing is an attached product, multifamily product. So, I think we just got to consider all these things when we look into these issues. And finally, I can't stay around for the second part of this discussion for the stakeholder input, but it took us a very long time, and it was a very open public process to get where we are today with how we evaluate bonus densities for all of these different districts. And I think it's a great idea to have all the stakeholders come in and discuss it. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to be something that happens very quickly, and I think it should be well thought out, and everyone should have a place and a chance to speak so that we get the best product for our community, not just those that show up at some of these meetings, but for the future of the town.
Thank you, Mr. Bearden. We'll be talking about that soon, and that is our intent. Mr. Wren.
Yes, Joseph Wren, 1517 Trumpet Vine. I appreciate this committee taking the time to throw out some ideas and discuss these issues. And I guess, and I don't know the answer to this, so this is more of a comment, but I know when we look at the growth rate, we look at certificate of occupancies, and it's roughly 3.4% or so. And I think, like I said, I don't know the answer to this, but if there's a way, since planning is an action word, if we can look at permits issued as well in that, so we're not looking backwards in a lot of ways. And so we can go looking forward rather than, you know, some of us having to look at permits issued and look at the growth of the town. And that way I think we can see forward, better forward thinking in what we have going forward and what's on the books. I know not everything that gets permitted is going to be built, but that's something that I think it's, as far as planning goes, is a very important responsibility. So I appreciate the time and look forward to the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Wren. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Ms. Montgomery.
I had knee surgery, so it might take me a minute.
Okay. I'm Louisa Montgomery. I live at 133 Mary Street. That is considered the Old Village. I'm on the Old Village Historic District Commission. Speaking of density, brings to mind the large piece of property, the large lot on 131 Lobo Drive, which has been under discussion because of the trees. When the plat was first drawn up, the architect omitted some of the trees that were there, and so the land was divided up into three lots, which do fall under the square footage. However, you have three lovely homes with the required two automobile parking spaces, but that's mommy and daddy's car. What about the teenagers? What about Junior, who comes home from college, and daughter who's at Wando? You might have more than two cars per family, especially when you've got affluent families who could be building these lovely, very expensive homes. You can't park on the side of Live Oak Drive. If you have a house, if you have two houses facing Live Oak Drive, you may have four or five automobiles other than the two that are in the driveway. Then you've got that lot toward the back that you have to go up to Tuma Lane to get to. Tuma Lane is a wreck. I mean, it is a mess. It's full of potholes. It's very narrow. The garbage truck and the recyclable truck don't even go up there if they have to. The recycle people send a little truck up on Fridays because the big truck can't get up there on Thursdays when our neighborhood gets picked up. So you've got to think about it, as several people have said, it's not just the plat and the architect and the drawing, it's the people and how many people are going to be using that property. And you think, in particular, Live Oak Drive, the extra cars, because you know perfectly well, most of us each have a car, and Sonny and Susie have a car. It's going to be a problem on Live Oak Drive. It really, truly is. So I just don't see how you're going to have the density of three lots on Live Oak Drive on the former Helen and Charlie Dobby property. And as we sit here, all of us have taken time from a busy morning to talk about density. How can you say density with a straight face with Earl's Court? I mean, 26 units on how much of an acre?
Thank you, Ms.
Nicole.
Thank
enough.
You. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, please. Mr. Chairman, yes. Ms. Montgomery's comments remind me of Tuner Lane, and she mentioned the narrow street there. Something that is, that in addition to the concern she brings, that is a concern that I have that I'd like to take a significant look at is, I think part of that issue, in addition to it being a narrow lane that I agree with you, is isn't there now a tree, a very grand old tree, that the roots now almost make that street impassable? And I'm gravely concerned for the safety of the residents around that area. If the trash in the recycle truck can't get picked up, then what's going to happen when someone needs a fire put out or an ambulance that can get them out of their home? So we should take a good hard look at the issues that you brought up, and Tumor Lane needs to be looked at, and specifically the tree and the roots that are causing that street to be impassable.
Don't touch my tree.
Ma'am, you brought the issue.
All right, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Order.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Name and address.
Are you quite finished, Mark?
For now.
Roger O'Sullivan, 1551 Vansari Boulevard. I've heard the comment, letting infrastructure catch up, that we face things like that. And I'm upset that we're looking purely at this moment, maybe not for the long term, at residential growth and population. And that kind of, forgive me, best backwards approach to the whole thing results in things like Wando High School being a trailer city, McCants and Rifle Range and Route 41 being the new thoroughfares but only two lanes, and as our mayor has said a couple of times, and no money to change that. And I think we have to, in the grand scheme of looking at our density and our pace growth in population, we have to look and try to get the infrastructure development out in front of the population growth in many cases, so that it doesn't become vexing and unmanageable for the city and very upsetting for the population. It looks like, from my standpoint, living here only 4 years, that the only sector that seems to keep up with infrastructure growth is the medical, the hospitals. We seem to have a surplus of those around. And if we could ensure that we're looking carefully at structural growth as we pace, reduce or increase the pace as necessary to keep up with the demands of the population as it grows, I think we'd have a happier community. I certainly would be happy. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Anybody else? Ms. Sullivan.
Can you email me a copy? It's on the website.
Pat Sullivan, 1002 Plantation Court. I think it's great that we're experiencing the opposite of apathy here. I'm really happy that people are getting out and speaking their minds. The one thing I would ask, though, is instead of complaining and saying, we don't want this, we don't want that, I think it's much more helpful to come forward with a solution or a suggestion or a recommendation. So try to bring things forward from a positive standpoint. We've talked about mixed use and workforce housing and affordable housing. I'm very concerned about definition of mixed use, and I'm happy to hear that we do want to tighten that up because if it's very loose, then that could turn out to be have a negative effect. Workforce housing, affordable housing are very, they have a ring to them. Developers, in my opinion, seem to hold a carrot out saying, I'm going to do this. And I'm totally for it. But let's make sure of definitions and make sure that we are accomplishing what the purpose of that is. For example, workforce housing. It's housing that should be close to where people work. And I know there's a developer that wants to put some workforce housing outside of the urban growth boundary. And workforce housing, great idea, but please, let's stick to the boundaries that we set where we change from low, medium, high density to rural. Outside of the urban growth boundary is zoned one unit for 3 acres. So let's please, for the sake of putting in the kinds of developments different parts of the population need, but let's stick to the urban growth boundary.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
There's an issue that I think has been little discussed. I think it's important to bring up in this forum, and that involves annexation and the impact that annexation laws have had on the town of Mount Pleasant. Mm-hmm. And I've put town council and fire town councils in a position of not having the authority to control the destiny of the community. Specifically, I think of developments mostly in the northern part of town. Dunes West, Park West, Carolina Park, and most recently, I think, Oyster Point, are all projects, sizable projects, that proceeded to have development within Charleston County, originally not in town of Mount Pleasant. Some of those projects, like Carolina Park, received approval, and Dunes West received approval in Charleston County. And the town councils at the time were forced with agreeing to take in these large, impactful projects as a means to protect the citizens of Mount Pleasant. In other words, to extract whatever they could to lessen the blow for the community. And so what I'm talking about doesn't really impact the Coleman Boulevard sector. Obviously, that's long established. But when we talk about infrastructure being in place, and we talk about different things around town, some of these issues and some of these approvals, councils had to give as a protection to the residents and didn't have the ability to control their developments. In fact, Carolina Park, when that was approved, Carolina Park was going to go as far, and they had gone to the COD, to receive private approval for private water and wastewater facilities. Imagine that, outside on the outskirts of town. And so much of the development that has occurred has happened without the ability of town councils to control it, especially on the northern edge. And that is a critical component to the growth discussion. For example, let's say tomorrow you want to implement a building permit allocation program because you're worried about growth. That program would not touch one of the approved units in Carolina Park. Wouldn't touch one. Why? Because the council at the time had to take in that project because it would have been approved in Charleston County. So my point for making these comments is that we all wish we had more authority to control some of these projects when they come in. Unfortunately, based on the annexation laws we have in this state, which do not match the annexation laws of our surrounding states, our elected body doesn't have that ability. And because we don't have that ability, the die has been cast on developing patterns in Mount Pleasant for decades without your control.
If,
Mr. Chairman, if I can add to that, as your water supply committee chairman, at our Water Works Commissioner meeting, we were talking about this issue and as one of the stakeholders for discussion purposes. And, you know, the significant negative impact of even having that, the reality of that, the under-recovery of depreciation was talked about as we build out the infrastructure to water and sewer. Think back of when that water and sewer went into Carolina Park. Think back of the less than 10 customers that were contributing towards the use and upkeep and maintenance, operations and maintenance of that program, which you could say, well, that's too bad. Well, guess who that affects? All of us. Mount Pleasant Water Works serves all 70,000 members of residents of this community, including each of us. So the provisions of capacity far in advance of utilization counteracts the just-in-time delivery concept.
You've got, I've heard some say, as you know, the mayor's top legislative priority is the widening highway 41. And some have said, well, you know, we perhaps shouldn't have to be in this position if council hadn't approved all the development. Dunes West and Park West, those developments up in that area have not been the result of any decisions by this town council or any town council before. Dunes West, as you know, has been around for 25 years. And so now we're dealing with approvals beyond our borders, further up Highway 41, which are going to impact us and impact our residents. So, you know, just food for thought as we go forward.
Well, and I would be remiss if I didn't publicly state that I have no intentions of consideration of a permanent allocation program of any sorts. As I said earlier, I would consider all the items that we talked about earlier with the elimination of the bonus density, including the single family homes, tightening up the definition of mixed use. But in no way, form, or fashion do I believe that it worked, and I'm not interested in considering any form of that coming back, is my opinion. Just want to put that out.
Thank you, sir. Any other public comment? Yes, sir. Please come forward.
Greg Sidwell, 1721 James Bassford Place in Park West. Two comments. The actions of Charleston County outside the borders of Mount Pleasant, I believe, a recent example of that is Wando Village with 640 residential units authorized right next to us. I'm unfamiliar with the work of the Planning Commission to date and this discussion of multifamily development, but I ask, are roads, traffic throughways part of this? And if not, it's my firm belief that it should be, because it's a critical part of the infrastructure. It's already mentioned several times here. You got workforce riding in on the roads, or sometimes non-existent roads, to work in Mount Pleasant. And the amount of buildup that is occurring, been already authorized, perhaps not even started, case in point, Wando Village, several within Park West, I think demands that roads be part and parcel of this discussion on development. I would also note that in the review of several proposals that I've read, the quality of the traffic studies are piecemeal and they vary widely. So I think town council needs to take an integrated approach and a comprehensive approach to evaluating traffic studies submitted as parts of development proposals.
Thank you, sir. If that's all from the audience, any other discussion by committee on this part of the agenda item? I think it's all good information. We've certainly got it recorded. But the part of this now that's interesting is how do we proceed with options for stakeholder input? And that's, we certainly don't want to drag it out for 7 or 8 meetings. And Mr. O'Neill is tentatively pending approval the new chair of the Planning and Development Committee. So it's going to be his baby starting next month. And going forward, we need to know how to proceed. Councilman Gartch had a nice recommendation that he sent out to us, and that was to have the committee formulate a series of questions for each of the many stakeholder participants. And it may take a couple meetings just to put those questions together and then distribute them to the selected stakeholders and let them come back with those and maybe have a group round table or have seven or eight of them at a time come in and share their responses with us. So I open that up for discussion now. And as I said, Chris, it's going to be your baby. So you're going to have to be the guiding light here.
Yeah, I think we've identified some stakeholders that we know we want to hear input from. I think given this meeting today and the discussion we've had, that folks in the audience and those in the community should be on notice that we're looking for input. So if you're a stakeholder that wants to have input in this process, you can go to the town website, councilclk@tompsc.com, email the clerk of council and let them know that you are either with a group or an individual that wants to provide input into this process. And I think that's, if you're not on the list, some people are going to get a call. I mean, the Tribe Association of Realtors is going to get a call. Safe Shin Creek Corporation is going to get a call. You're going to be solicited for input. Some of the affected neighborhoods in the area and some other groups, Michelle Knapp, I think I saw her here earlier, she'll be solicited for input as far as what they do with some of the workforce housing and stuff like that. So those groups, but if before we get to you, you're a group that wants to have some input, you need to let us know. This presentation is available on the website. If you leave here, don't leave here today. If you want to know where it is and can't navigate the website, Martine, I saw her. Martine runs our website. Find her before you leave, and she'll definitely point you in the right direction to find this on the website. So let's make sure you know how to get to it. I think the questions that we'd circulate a little bit earlier were good. I think that's a good springboard. I think, I don't think this needs to be a 6-month process. I think this needs to be something that, and if we need to meet more frequently than once a month, I think we can do that. We need to give time to get this presentation in front of folks, and we need to give these folks some time to come up with their thoughts and responses to it. But, I think the questions that we circulated earlier were good, and we can go through those if you'd like, and I think we need to add a definition of mixed use to those questions. Those may spur other questions, but mm-hmm. I think that's a good start to where we're going.
Well, we would always have that last one. Other comments, questions, and concerns that we would get back, so that there's no way we're going to come up with all the questions that is on everyone's mind, every stakeholder's mind. So, but allowing that, the last question would be, what are the additional questions, comments, and concerns, which opens it up to everything. I think the key thing is to get going on it. Let's get that feedback.
So how do you want to proceed? Do you want to go ahead and let's set the next meeting for the regular February planning meeting with questions coming from council members as well as this committee?
I think if council members have questions for which they think that we should seek input on, please email them to me. We'll add them to this list, and then in February, I think for some folks that are ready to go with some recommendations, we'll start hearing from some folks.
And that's fine. Let's pare the questions down at the next meeting, at the regular meeting in February, yeah. And then let's decide who we're going to bring in.
I think that's good.
Or how many we're going to bring in. I think this could get long and drawn out, so I'd rather, if we're going to have a special meeting to do that, we may have to consider that also.
Correct.
Any recommendations from staff?
Yes, sir. As it looks today, our next planning committee meeting will be sizable. And so as I mentioned, sir, about the possibility of having a special meeting before that time, it may be warranted to do that.
For this purpose?
Just for this issue.
Right. Yeah. Okay, I'll leave that to you, pending council's approval of you next week.
Correct. And I think some of the input that we may hear from council at our meeting Tuesday night on this, I think we'll have some really good direction, and then we'll put this together and get this out. We'll get a meeting scheduled. Sounds like a fun and exciting February planning committee meeting. What I also like about this is, in you know, lots of credit to staff, and I think we've heard some from folks here in the room today. Staff has been fantastic, and they've done a great job of putting this information together. They've worked really hard, and this doesn't need to be on staff to come up with these recommendations. I think what we went through earlier this year is we looked at some of the setbacks and things like that. Those were issues where we really needed staff. This is where they need direction from us. So I want staff to weigh in, but I think this is where we're looking for the stakeholders for your recommendations on changes and what they should look like. And then I think we will want your opinion, Christiana. We'll want your staff to weigh in on some of these things as far as feasibility. But I want to take, I think you've done a good job of putting together. I want to take this off your plate and let's pass it to the public and let them come tell us and let us make some decisions. So I don't want this to be a burden on you and your staff. You've got enough going on. You guys are doing a fantastic job, and you worked really hard this past year. So.
Okay. Anything?
Thank you.
Not right now. You can ask me later.